Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Today we're going to be playing A Feast for Odin, designed by Uwe Rosenberg of Agricola, Caverna, Patchwork, Bonanza, Cottage Garden. Those are just the ones we played.
Yeah, I just listed out the ones we played.
There's many, many more. The artist is Dennis Lohausen of The Quacks of Quedlinburg, Dominion Intrigue, Taverns of Tiefenthal, Camel Up, and Crown of Amara. Again, just the ones actually played. Camel Cup. It is published by Feuerlandspiele, although possibly Asmodee related.
Yeah, but their site doesn't have it in the game catalog. Z-Man doesn't have it in their catalog. Could be out of print right now. I am not entirely sure. I could not find the answer.
I feel like all of Uwe Rosenberg's games are like that, where you don't get sort of who the publisher is. So the description is, A Feast for Odin is a saga in the form of a board game. You are living the cultural achievements, mercantile expeditions, and pillages of those tribes we know as Vikings, a term that was used quite differently towards the end of the first millennium. In this game, you will raid and explore new territories. You will also experience their day-to-day activities, collecting goods to achieve financially secure position in society. In the end, the player whose possessions bear the greatest value will be declared the winner. The mechanics are automatic resource growth, dice rolling, grid coverage, income, push your luck, tile placement, worker placement, turn order, pass order. The box art is you know, it's a little more stylized than a normal Uwe, I feel like.
We went with a different artist.
Yeah. It's got some, some very Viking-y bearded people sitting around a table, a feast table, holding up their horn of mead.
What I appreciate is there's not horns on their helmets.
I knew you were going to point that out. Yes.
It actually looks like they tried to be more historically accurate.
Yep. Got some nice Viking style houses in the background.
Yeah.
Mountains. You know, good stuff. So based on all this, would you pull it off the shelf?
Yeah. I mean, the mechanics sound, push your luck. I think that's all I caught, but that's all I needed to hear. And I do love the theme. I feel like we've actually had this on our list for a while and tried to play it at a couple of places. So, yeah, I'm very intrigued. I have been for a while.
So when I've picked up Agricola in the past at a store, someone has almost always walks up and says, oh, you don't want that one. You want to play A Feast for Odin. And then when I look over at the box for A Feast of Odin, it's huge. It's like it's bigger than the Caverna box, which I also think is a very big box. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, I've never actually picked up A Feast for Odin. It's the same thing with like Gloomhaven. I think if I had known nothing about Gloomhaven, I would never pick up the Gloomhaven box.
Because it's so big.
It's so big. It's intimidating.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I would pick this up for that exact reason. And the fact that it's always like, oh, it's Agricola, but better. It's Caverna, but better. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I already have games like that. Well, I mean, we don't, but Eric has Caverna. And we've had Agricola in the past, but we've gotten rid of it for other worker placement games. Mm-hmm. So it's like, is it really different enough that I'm even going to bother? So that's another reason why I haven't picked it up.
Yeah. I mean, same thing. It's been on the list forever because, you know, everybody says, oh, you got to play this one. It's the newer iteration of Agricola and Caverna. But I already have Caverna, so I haven't felt the need to like run out and get it. And then it seems like too intimidating to grab it like a board game cafe or something, just because, I mean, even Caverna, like I don't play that much because it takes forever to set up.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I am excited to play it and try it out and see how it compares to the other ones. So how do we think it's played based on that, BP?
Well, you guys just all told me it's just like Caverna, but better. Well,
that's what people say.
Well, that's what we've been told.
I don't trust people. And these mechanics seem a little bit different.
We've been fooled by people before.
I think the core worker placement piece will probably be similar. It's a Uwe Rosenberg, so you can guarantee we're collecting animals.
Okay, so we have worker placement. So we're going to be placing little meeples on spots to do stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. It sounds like we've got to, I mean, oh, come on, these are Vikings. So we're going to have to get on ships.
Yes.
And go places and obviously it says pillage. Yeah, some raiding, some trading. That's the thing with Vikings that we'll get into in a little bit. They also sometimes legitimately wanted to set up trade options.
Can we pause real quick and just, I enjoy the description where it goes, and they wanted a financially secure position. They're like, I'm going to take these jewels and put them in my 401k.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this in my F fund.
So, yeah, so we're going to want to get good. So I'm assuming kind of Caverna-like, like maybe there's going to be some caves or some like great monasteries or something to set up and constantly go raid. But push your luck. So
that's the one that I don't feel like is in Caverna or Agricola.
No.
So that seems a little different. So maybe like the raid will be a little push your luck. Like you can go out and raid, but like the longer you stay out, like the, you know,
the more your village maybe. Risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or your village becomes susceptible to raiding.
Well, I mean, it is a new Vega game. I don't think we're going to get too, I don't think our own villages will be raidable. I don't think there'll be enough direct conflict for that, which I agree with you. That would be a fun game, but I don't think it's going to be in this one. But yeah, I think we're going to be going out and raiding like a just like a worker placement spot that says raid here and you put a worker there. Nothing like too intense.
I'm a little confused then about like where the push your luck is really going to come in. Like, is it going to be a really good push your luck or is it just going to be a flavorful push your luck?
Yeah.
You have me almost thinking it's just going to be a flavorite.
Me too. Yeah. So I'm not sure how that'll all play out. I'm sure we're going to be placing tiles down to build little like Viking town, like a Caverna or Agricola. Collecting resources, going on
outposts.
But yeah, so I think we kind of have the idea of how it'll play. I'm sure it'll be some variation.
Maybe the push your luck, thinking about Vikings, is like maybe your warriors go to Valhalla. I don't know. Maybe there's some like, warrior feed or something.
Well, who gets to be Ragnar furry pants? Right?
I would really like there to be like more like religious piece to it that is not like, you know. But
yeah,
I feel like
it doesn't sound like it from the
No, just his style of games are all very traditional, like, you know, people farming, you know, here's dwarves, but they're still farming in a very realistic way. Anyway, so tell us what Vikings would have been doing in this game.
Right. I mean,
building up their 401k and making sure they're ready for retirement.
Vikings obviously have fascinated, I feel like, modern society for quite a few decades, at least, in contemporary pop culture. I mean, obviously, one of the big ones that comes to mind is History Channel's The Vikings, which I just have to say this about the History Channel.
You mean the Hitler Channel?
I mean, they have now they're the Alien Channel.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
But they don't cite their sources. And so this whole thing, and they love to make dramas.
It's just one big plagiarism.
I mean, or they're just making stuff up. I feel like if you've got a valid argument and you want to portray history realistically, you tell the audience where you're getting this stuff from. Wait, I don't know.
Are you suggesting that television has made up stuff?
I'm just saying that based on the sources that we have, is that women were not necessarily a part of the entire Viking raids. Most of them were, in fact, men. But anyway, just based on the sources that we have.
Let me just pause you real quick and go to the list of potential sponsors and cross off the History Channel.
Yes, you can. And I'll be fine with that. How I portray Vikings when I talk about it in my Western Civ classes is in a very similar way to how we talk about barbarians and how we talk about migrations and how we talk about people needing to find resources. So what you start to have happen in this period that they become much more prevalent is you start to have some climactic changes. You have a population growth taking place. And of course, you also have on the continent, right, expansion going on as well, and commercial revolution and agricultural revolutions taking place. And so that, of course, would attract, right, people of all means. And so from about the 800s, maybe late 700s, but mostly 800s through around the 10th century, most of these Viking groups were most active, and they were super great with their boats, which are fantastic and could go both seaworthy and riverworthy. So this is really cool when you think about Europe. I mean, I think we most think of them attacking like places like England and the, you know, northern coasts of France, which they did. But they like sailed all the way up the rivers. They made their way into Paris and well inland in France. They also, of course, made their way to the Black Sea and even Constantinople. So, I mean, they really made their way around and obviously eventually settling down into what would become Russia as well. So groups from Sweden, especially. So this whole idea of starting off as kind of raiders, if you will, they also became traders, and also because they had come from mostly farm communities, eventually wanting to, and you can see this in various groups that did settle down. It's not like these were all just like one conglomerate, monolithic, right, groups of people. Really, they get lumped together because of how people from the continent viewed them. So, I mean, there were quite a diverse group of people from, right, different areas. But eventually would, you know, make their way again, like I said, like as far as Constantinople. Some of them made their way even into the Mediterranean and North Africa and would eventually settle down and start farming and their 401ks that they had brought with them from those rich monasteries in England.
All right. So the game lasts for six rounds. It recommends this for people who are learning the mechanics. And this is the short game. The regular game lasts seven rounds. Don't ask. I don't know.
Okay.
You're going to earn points for the ships that you own, houses that you own, the goods inside your houses.
Your 401k.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. Along with exploration to islands, which you will also fill with goods. And you'll gain many of these things through raiding, pillaging, or trading.
Why just islands?
As Vikings do. I don't know. Probably that's just they wanted to. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so as per Uwe tradition, the first player is chosen randomly. Mm-hmm. But I thought of some. So last to touch a longship.
Eric, I think, seen a dragon.
Last
ship.
To visit a Nordic country.
Eric's visited Nordic countries.
Those were very specific aimed towards Eric. But then I messed up because I wrote last to drink from a mug with Norse runes on it, which I have, that Eric bought me when he went to Norway. But we woke up so early that I forgot to drink out of that mug.
Oh.
So, I mean, you're still the only one with the mug, so.
Yeah. So we'll just do it randomly.
Let's just have Eric go.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I did not touch the longship. I feel like that would have been.
Yeah, but you were the last to visit a Nordic country.
Yeah.
All right. So everyone's going to start with six Vikings. If we were doing the long game, which is a round longer, we would only start with five Vikings. We're going to start with a mead, an occupation card, which work like the occupation cards in Agricola, which just sort of give you bonuses and they'll trigger at different times. Three weapons cards. One will be a snare, which you use for hunting game, a spear, which you use for hunting whales, and a bow, which you will use for hunting bigger game.
With six Vikings, you're supposed to take down whales.
Yeah, well, the Vikings themselves actually represent chiefs to tribes, and you're like a conglomeration of tribes. So we're more like jarls with multiple kind of chiefs under us.
Okay.
Each of the rounds, except the last, we will work through 12 phases. Some of them will work through simultaneously and others sequentially, and the final round will end after phase nine. So phase one, a new Viking. We take a Viking from our banquet table and we put it in our thing circle. That's what it calls it, a thing circle. Next, we're going to harvest. So based on the Viking that we just picked up, it's going to tell us what we harvest. So we're going to get a bunch of orange goods, which are typically agricultural type items. So it's like wheat and stuff like that. Then we're going to turn an exploration board and place silver. So there's four islands that you can explore. Underneath our Vikings on our home board, it will tell us which one to flip, and then we'll put money on the other ones. So basically, when you explore there, if there's money on it, you'll get the money. If we ever flip that board, the money gets removed. Phase four, we draw a new weapon. So everybody gets a new weapons card. We start with one of each minus the longsword. And so you have potentials to get longswords. All right. So all those are done simultaneously. Phase five is the first place where we're going to do action. So starting with the first player, players will take turns placing Vikings on the spaces on the action board. There's like 55 actions on this action board. It's nuts. They are in four columns, and the columns will dictate how many Vikings you need to put onto that action. So if the action's in column four, you have to use four Vikings to use that action. If it's in column one, you only need one Viking. And like in traditional worker placement games, if somebody's already got to that space, you can't go there. Green generally represent production, so you'll just straight up get stuff. Dark yellow or golden brown is an exchange, so you'll change stuff into other stuff. Blue is overseas trading, so generally it will require a ship, and you will pay silver to get things. Yellow is immigration, so basically you're going to send away your Vikings to immigrate to other islands, and you'll get to cover up portions of your banquet table, which we'll get to in a minute. Red are typically hunting, raiding, and pillaging, and it involves dice rolling, which is, I'm pretty sure, where the push your luck aspect comes into it.
We were right about that.
Orange is exploration, so you'll get to claim those islands. Brown are occupation cards, so it will either let you draw additional ones or play ones from your hand. And then of the occupation cards, yellow are generally immediate and they're one time. Blue will have any time actions, so you can do them at any time during your turn. Red cards are triggered at a specific time. So it'll be things like, hey, when you have three longships, trigger this card, and you get to trigger it once. And then green cards are one time use and activate at the first occurrence of a specific event. So that's all turn five. And we're going to go around the table until everybody either places all their Vikings or passes and says, I don't want to place any more Vikings. Phase six, we determine start player. So the player who placed the last Viking is now the start player. Phase seven, we get income. So on our home board, the lowest value still showing on our home board is the amount of income we get in silver. Phase eight is animal breeding. So cows and sheep like to get down. If you have at least one pregnant animal, you will add an additional of that animal. And if you have at least two non-pregnant animals of one type, you'll flip over one of them to the pregnant side. So the tiles will have a pregnant side and a not pregnant side. Obviously, you have to have two non-pregnant sheep to impregnate a sheep. You can't impregnate a sheep with a cow and make a cow sheep. Phase nine is feast. So this is where we're going to have to feed all our Vikings. So we're going to use the goods that we collect to fill out the spaces on our banquet table. You can also use silver because apparently we can eat silver. The big thing is if you use two of the same items, so say you use two wheat, one of those wheats has to be turned sideways and it fills up less spaces because we're trying to go across the banquet table because Vikings want a diverse diet. And so when you feed them the same things.
It's really weird because I don't think.
That's how they word it.
I mean.
All right. Bonuses. So this is phase 10. So on your home board, if you have surrounded any of the spaces with goods printed on them, you will get those goods. And then phase 11, we're going to update and add to the mountain strips. So there's tiles on the table that have resources on them. We're going to remove the leftmost resource from those mountain strips. And then if there's only silver or no resources remaining, we're just going to remove it. And then at the end of that phase, we're going to add a new mountain strip and fill it out with the appropriate goods, which are printed on it. And then finally, phase 12, we're going to remove all our placed Vikings from the action board and return them to our home board. And then we'll reset and go into the next turn. At any time, players can place goods on their home board, exploration board, or house tiles. The placement rules are printed next to the placement area. So, for example, on your home board, green tiles cannot be orthogonally adjacent. They can be diagonally adjacent, but blue tiles can be adjacent to each other. You can also purchase ships for silver. You can make change with your silver, and players can arm their whaling ships and long ships with ore. So you can add an additional ore to your whaling ship and three ore to your long ship, and those will help you with whaling or raiding. And then played occupation cards with blue backgrounds offer you additional anytime actions. Finally, the game ends immediately after the feast phase of the last round. Players add up all their positive points for their ships, immigrations, exploration, sheds and houses, sheep and cattle, occupation, silver, final income, and whoever owns the English crown. And then players will subtract the negative points showing on their home board, exploration board, sheds, and houses. They will all have negative points. So you're going to eventually want all your tiles to fill up and cover up those negative points.
Like Caverna, you want all the little covers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the player with the highest score is the winner. There were no tiebreakers. So apparently we can't tie. And that is it. That is the summary of the rules. And there's still a bunch more to talk about, but.
Holy crap. I mean, there were a bunch of colors.
Yeah.
So Tefla, let's play.
We just finished a game of Feast for Odin. To recap, BP had 8 plunder points. I had 28 plunder points, and Kiwi won with 38 plunder points. Winning strategy, Kiwi.
Try to get as many blue goods as I could. I found some occupations that helped out. I had one that I could kill a cow every turn and turn it into a necklace with its innards, I guess. I'm not sure.
You went to the druid. Yeah.
So that's what I tried to do. Plus, I immigrated a couple of times so that I could spend less food every time and try to turn that food into.
I think similar strategy for everybody. I think I did some of the early raiding, got the crown. Then they started doing all the plundering. So I.
I had a card that every time I fed meat to my feast, I got weapons. So I was getting a ton of weapons every turn.
BP had a ton of occupation cards. They gave her a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, but I still lost. So obviously the occupation cards are not the end all. I think I confused the whole exploration emigration thing. Mm. I think now I kind of forgot about emigration because I was thinking exploration at one point. But then you guys were like, then you get this other board. And I'm like, well, I don't want another board. Having trouble covering up my own board.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, I was just from round to round trying to figure out what I was going to do. And basically, it was all about trying to feed my people first.
Yeah, at the start of the game, I was like, think Caverna and Agricola. Don't try to do everything. Focus on one strategy. And then I tried to do everything. Yeah. So I think comparing it to those games, there's a lot more randomness. Because like if you draw weapon cards that are all like whaling things, then you might want to go whaling. Or like I drew a bunch of swords early, so I was like, guess I'm going to go plundering. Your strategy shifts more mid-game, I felt like, than those do. Yeah, there's things we didn't really do, which was building the house cards and the exploration cards and that kind of stuff we really didn't touch on. I think there's a couple other spaces that we maybe never even...
Yeah, I mean, none of us filled up our player boards to even, like, warrant opening up a exploration to try and, you know, go there.
Yeah.
Which I felt like we all did a pretty good job at the end, like, getting stuff that we could put on our boards.
Yeah. Obviously, I was way behind you guys.
Yeah.
Well, you weren't that much less in terms of filling up the board than Kiwi was.
I think with a lot of worker placement, especially Uwe Rosenberg games, like if you get behind in any of these games, there's really no way to ahead because, you know, all the spots you would want to go to are now the spots where other people are going because they're in a spot to just be like, bah, I can throw a worker at that. Mm-hmm. There's really no catch up mechanic.
Yeah, which I think is really tough because like it only happened to me once, but I tried to go hunting and failed and I had to go hunting again. Yeah. And it cost me 2 workers and it didn't, I don't think I had that one had a big impact, but it could, if you just got unlucky, like 2 or 3 times, you could lose like 6 workers total. And that would be a pretty big impact on the game. So like, I'm a little bit surprised that there's as many luck elements in this as for one of his games. Cause like you said, they're pretty punishing. If you make a mistake, strategy wise they're punishing, and then if you add luck in there it's even more punishing.
Right.
What do you think of the theme, BP? Do you feel like a Viking?
No. Well, like at first I was thinking about this before when we were playing and I was like, you know, towards the end, like the raiding and pillaging kind of, except that I wasn't going for like just the cool stuff. I was going for stuff that would fit into a Tetris board, and
I think No sums it up pretty well.
And then I felt like I was just trying to, feed my people, which I feel like is any kind of worker placement game. You want to make sure to a certain extent, right? Like you take care of your workers and then you can do everything else. But like, I mean, I feel like the whole point of Vikings is that they're out sailing, exploring.
I mean, I can't imagine a lot of Vikings sitting around trying to figure out how to like turn their cows so that they fit into the correct orientation to fill up the land that they need to fill up, or they die, I guess. The pieces are there. It's nice. You go exploring and stuff, but I think theme-wise, his aren't never terribly thematic, but I think Agricola can at least work a little better because it's very simple. Like you're feeding people and you're farming. And so it kind of works there. Yeah. And like the occupation cards don't really like add much to the theme. They're just like normal occupations.
Yeah. It's just like the occupation cards from Agricola.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't even like a buildup, like with the raid. Like I got the crown of England on my first raid because I rolled high.
Yeah. And then you were so disappointed when you found out.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, I got the crown. It's also worth 2 points. Cool. BP.
There's so much on the board, like on the table to begin with. So there's a lot to take in. I mean, and then I think at the beginning, I remember I was like, what's this symbol? What's this symbol? What's this symbol? And again, it doesn't really tie into, I feel like I'm a Viking with very much of the art. So I feel like it's your general, like big, I don't know what the name, maybe Euro game type, yeah, where it's that big thing with all the components and you spend hours playing it and there's a lot of strategy and you have to think a lot. Yeah. Those are Euro games, right?
Generally.
Uwe Rosenberg games are like the definition of Euro games.
Yes.
Of a
Euro, yeah.
So art-wise, I just feel like, meh, like sure, some of it was clearer than others, but I feel like a lot of it was like, how do you know the cube's an ore? Like, do you play enough games that you realize a cube's an ore? Like, there's nothing Viking about the cards whatsoever either. So I'm going to go with the art is sufficient, but not exciting.
I think it's an improvement over Agricola and Caverna. I think it's better. Really? Just like looking at the board, like there's a little bit more to it, I think. The player mats are kind of nice looking. I like the little boat spots and the dock, but like you said, it's there.
I think ultimately the art's a little boring, but if you got more exciting with the art, everything would just be way too busy.
Oh, it's already so much super already busy there,
to begin with. So
mechanics, Kiwi.
It's a worker placement game.
I
thought it was interesting with the dice rolling. I mean, I agree. I think there's a lot of luck that goes into it, but it was interesting with a lot of worker placements, it's place a person here, do some sort of action, whether it's, you know, trade a resource for another resource, get resources, blah, 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 play a card. But I don't think we've played a lot where, you know, there's like a separate mini game almost that goes with the action. So like I'm going to this action to play a mini game. So that was different. I'm not sure if it was different enough that I'm like, yes.
I don't know that it was many enough to even call a mini game.
Yeah, I mean,
like, again, that gets me back to where we were at the beginning. Is the push your luck going to be flavor?
Yeah. And as soon as you said that, I wasn't going to answer because I didn't want to taint it, but I already knew that the answer was yes.
Yes.
It wasn't the kind of push your luck that we
like. And the mini game was not even mini enough to, I feel, call a mini game.
It was roll a dice and try to change the value.
Yeah.
That's what it was. But yeah, I mean, other than that, it's the same.
It would be cool if it were a little.
I can see why people, if you pick up Agricola or Caverna, people would say like, oh, you should take a look at A Feast for Odin.
No.
I can see why they say that, though, because mechanics-wise.
Because I just feel like it's like more of the same.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. People are trying to say that instead of Agricola and Caverna, you should just play A Feast for Odin. That's what people are trying to say. They're not saying it's a better game.
Well, I think they are, because this is supposed to be his like next iteration of it, where you could tell because like, you know, he came out with all those little Tetris style block games.
Yeah.
Right. And there. And so he added that into his Agricola Caverna.
Yeah.
It's definitely much more complex.
Yeah. The occupation cards came out in Caverna and they seem to have come back in for A Feast for Odin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, he added the Tetris style stuff to kind of add into that whole piece of it. So yeah, you can see like mechanically, you can see how it all came together, especially if you've played the previous games and how it's sort of built up to this. And I can see why people say, well, you know, this is like Caverna, but with more, and that must make it better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see like if you're going to buy one and play it a lot, like I bet this game has more to it. This game could probably, like, you know, strategy wise, if you're a hardcore strategy
Yokohama
person,
man.
Yeah, like this could probably like figure things out forever in here and still not maximize your points. So I can see why they do say that. And then like mechanically, it does all work well together in terms of like collecting resources, like feeding your people is more interesting than just having to have food that you feed. Like everything is like just a little bit expanded out more than the previous games. Just a Viking out in your field, like just organizing your gold into a certain pattern to fill it up because you got to have a square box of loot.
Can't put this cape by the whale bones. It'll make the cape go bad.
And you're just putting it in, like, your field. Like, so all your farmers like, hey, we could use this, you know, field to make food. And they're like, nope, we got to spread all our loot out over it.
This is where I put all my wool treasure chest, right next to my silver hoard.
This is where my silver goes.
Yeah, so rules-wise, the rule book was pretty big. I think this is the longest, like, rules summary. And I say summary with heavy air quotes. Like, I tried to keep as much out as possible, but still try to explain some of it. And, like, really what they do is they describe some of the graphics, but there's no, like, this is the exact same that this spot does. They only do that for some of the occupations. They described, you know, this is what the occupations do. So there was a couple of pieces for that. I mean, the rule book had good examples. I don't think the rule book was bad. It's just, it's decent number. I think it's like 20 pages and pretty much all of those are rules. So it's a lot.
In terms of like learning it, I mean, obviously it's a lot to take in. I do think it was, the basics weren't too hard to pick up. But yeah, there's so much to it that every time we got to something new, like now we want to go raiding. How do we do that? Now we want to go whaling. How do we do that? Now we want to do this. How do we do that? Like, it's just a lot of that for the whole game, figuring out the specifics on rules and like, oh, you can put ore on your board. You can put silver on your board. This can't go next to this, but can go next to this. It's a lot of little things like that.
Yeah, don't put your meat next to more meat.
Right.
You can't eat the same meat twice.
Diverse diet.
Yep.
Yeah.
Don't have too much fish.
Like, oh, that's way too many ribs for me. Please give me some flax.
Yeah. Wait. Too much fish. That's too much mercury. That's a problem.
Yeah. It took us a few rounds for sure to really figure it out. I think like halfway through, we're like, oh, we're finally getting the hang of it and can kind of figure out a strategy, but we're halfway through the game.
Yeah.
Like,
for a game of this complexity, it's actually good that we figured it out halfway through. Like, we've played some the whole game through. We're like, huh?
Yeah.
Player interaction? Yeah. It's a worker placement.
Yeah. So it's indirect at best.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really affect other people.
The first half of the game, I was like, I don't think we ever competed over a spot because there were so many things.
Nope. And I think there was only one time.
What did? I think the second half it did, because then we all started to try to go pillaging because we're all trying to get the high value. Yeah. And that became a struggle at the end. It's like the last round or two, I think there was a little more competition over spots for the high value ones. So I think it was interesting that like the first half of the game, I was thinking there's so many options. I don't care. You guys can do whatever you want. But by the last one, I still wouldn't say I really like paid attention to what you're doing other than when you put people on a spot that I wanted, I was like, God damn. Otherwise, it's work placement.
Yeah. And that's all we have to say about that.
Would you play it again, Kiwi?
No, I don't think I would. The part I like about worker placement is that kind of indirect, like more, there's so many action spots. It's so hard to, you know, even when somebody went to the spot, there was still somewhere else that you could go. Like I never felt like I was in a spot where somebody had taken the action that I wanted and I didn't have a good alternative.
Mm.
I'm glad I played it once so I could play. Yes. I could say, yes, I have played Feast for Odin. I don't think I would play it again. And I think I would disagree with people who, when somebody else picks up Agricola or Caverna, they say, oh, you should look at a Feast for Odin instead. I think if I had to choose between those three, I'm going to pick Caverna.
Yeah, I think just based on how you guys were talking about it all, I feel like, too, like it's a disservice to people who are also, I mean, again, coming from the civilian, non-super like gamey understanding, but semi there. Like, I feel like if someone's picking up Agricola or Caverna, like maybe they should go ahead and start with those because it might be a little less and maybe they will get into worker placement because it's a little less, right? And sometimes a little less is more when you're trying to attract people right?
I mean, there's still a lot. Like, there's still,
Still a lot. Yeah. But like, at the same time, like, you, like, seriously, like, looking at this, and it was just like, holy crap, I don't even know. Like, whatever, we're just gonna, this is our afternoon. Like, I knew I was committed to this, but like, yeah, like, as like someone walking by in like a convention hall or something, you're gonna look at this and you're just gonna keep on walking by if you're like someone like me who's just like that.
Yeah, but I think it also goes into my, I wouldn't pick this up because the box is too big.
It's true. It's true.
So it kind of, that kind of goes hand in hand, yeah, almost. Like,
yeah,
that looks like a lot.
And so, I mean, it's definitely one of those things where it's a certain group of people who are going to probably say yes. So, Eric, would you be that? Well,
you didn't
group
answer,
BP.
You didn't give an official answer.
Oh.
Would you play it again?
I did not. No. I would walk right on by. I feel like for worker placements, I think we all know where I am in worker placements. They're not my faves, like my husband. But he has bought a worker placement that we do love to enjoy, the viticulture, because then at least I get to pretend I'm making wine. Yeah. And I feel like that one has a little bit more direct because there's less spaces. So yes, there is more competition for what you can do. And so you really are like, and I think for us as players, probably all three of us, like that interaction is really.
Yeah. And that's the part I like about worker placement, and this game sort of takes it away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Eric, would you play it again?
I'm borderline on this. I think I might say yes, but okay, it'd be like a real rare
we'll
situation.
We'll still like you.
I mean, I'm surprised Kiwi's, I feel like Kiwi's probably more in like where I'm at with this. Cause like I wouldn't seek it out. I wouldn't exchange Caverna with it. Even if like it were right, a free exchange, or even if somebody wanted to just give me this game, I would be like, no, I've got Caverna. Cause like, I would never teach this game.
Yeah.
But like, I could see if somebody else had it set up and was like, hey, you want to come play? Like, and I had a free 4 hours. like I said, this, I will probably never play this again, but I think I would. Like, I enjoyed it. It's like Caverna. Like, I enjoy Caverna too. There's some elements of this I did like better. I like the feasting thing. It was more fun trying to put your food together than like just trying to collect it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's aspects I really did like, but like you said, it's too daunting. I've got a game that I think I like better in Caverna. And I even that I don't play that much because it's too much to teach and too long and too hard to set up. Mm-hmm. So like, I would say I enjoyed this enough that I would play it again. It kind of falls in that kind of borderline category of like, I can't see myself playing it again, but in a specific situation, sure. So yeah, that is a feast for Odin.
If you have any recommendations of games you would like to hear our impressions on, please send them our way. You can do so via the email at firstturntabletop@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at First Turncast, and the Viking podcasting camel. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcatchers. We look forward to hearing from you. Play more games. How do you turn a fish into a fur? You must have to go to a druid. I feel like you go to a druid.
I don't think you're directly
you go to a druid.
I don't think it's like Leviosa.
It's druid magic.
No, you're trading it.
I mean, in this case, it could be a druid. I'd like to go to the mountains.
Ooh, that's a good one too, with Antonio Banderas. Yeah. Ich bin der erste Mann.